Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the PBSC podcast. Steve Moore and Mark Castleman here. We are coming today with episode 207, if you can believe it. Pretty wild. We hope that with this being recorded during the holiday season, we hope that this finds you well and that you guys are enjoying this time to connect with family and friends and kind of renew for the coming year as we move into the next one. We had a really good submission from a partner come in a few weeks back. We're a little bit backlogged on our podcast, so we apologize. We've gotten a lot of submissions of late, but we're kind of taking those in order. And it's a topic that we have addressed before, but not for quite a while. And it does, like I said, come from a partner. I'll go ahead and it's short enough that I'm going to read it in this case, and then we'll just dive right into it. And this is what it says. Hey, guys. First, thank you so much for your podcast. It's helping more than you will ever know. My question is about separation and how to do this well. I found out my husband of 7 years had a severe sex addiction 4 months ago when I was 8 months pregnant. I moved out with our 2-year-old and in with my parents, telling them everything. He and I have thrown ourselves, individually into counseling and gotten support from our closest friends. However, my husband relapsed badly, although she doesn't specify how, and I realized I needed to give him a year of full separation to see if he can change for himself or I need to move on. How can I do this year well? What do we tell our church and wider community? And then she has in parentheses, our pastors are aware of everything. I don't want opinions and judgment if I stay or go, but I don't know how to live in this limbo without lying or pretending to be together. For our kids, is it better to live apart or together? I desperately need advice on boundaries and how to navigate separation with two littles. My husband is an amazing father committed to them, but his addiction got so out of control, I just don't trust what he's capable of. So the kids will be with me until he's 1 year sober. It's so hard.
Wow.
I know. It's just a heartbreaking submission. It's so hard to hear. Especially when you hear a situation like that where you know, she talks about him being such a good dad and, you know, this is going to have an impact on the kids and things. And it is. It's a really tough situation. But we do have some thoughts to offer on this. And it is going to come with some caveats, which Mark's going to get into here in just a second. But we do appreciate you reaching out in our hearts go out to you and to all the spouses who find themselves in a place like this. And frankly, to the addict partners as well, because it's just as difficult on their end for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, this is, while we can give some general principles and guidelines, these situations are extremely individualized.
Yeah.
There's just so much complexity that can exist with these. And that's why our very first recommendation, they do say here that they both have, it appears, individual counseling. We would just, whatever you've got to do to have qualified therapist help with this, to help you navigate it. Because as we say, it is so complex. You have general rules and guidelines, but then there's all of the issues with regard to each of these individuals, their relationship, their history, where things are at. there's just so much going on here that you've got to have outside help. So that would be our first big recommendation.
Absolutely. And the therapy piece is so important. We do applaud this couple because obviously they did mention, you know, they've each got individual therapists, which is wonderful. But it is so important to have a therapist in this process, recognizing that, you know, therapy is expensive and you guys are paying for that, you know, individually. I would say at least at the beginning, at an absolute minimum, swap out one of those sessions for a couple session, either with one of your therapists or even maybe ideally a really good CSAT or somebody who's a third party therapist who can kind of be the one who's navigating and wrangling, for lack of a better term, right? The therapy process itself, because having a third party who's unbiased, that nobody has, you know, who doesn't have skin in the game with one side versus the other is pretty critical when things have gotten this difficult, and can help provide a place for mediating some of the boundaries that we're going to talk about in just a minute, as well as a point of accountability for making sure that everybody's kind of staying on track, right? My wife, by profession, she's a project manager for a tech company. And that's kind of her job. Her job, as she oftentimes says, a large part of it is helping the other computer programmers and things basically do their job, right? Just kind of keep them running. And that sort of is the role that a therapist can take on in this kind of way, is help to be that accountability point for everybody and make sure that things are pacing well and then adjustments are being made. Because usually with a therapeutic separation, it's, you obviously, like with anything in therapy, you'll come up with an initial plan, but it is one of those things, just like the relationship itself, where it can and should be evolving as you guys either progress or regress. And having someone who has a firm hand at the wheel of that to kind of help you adapt is, really can't emphasize enough how important that is.
Yeah. The other side of this is there's a lot of paradigms and perspectives and understandings out there about what having a separation means. The way I was raised in a really volatile home was separation was basically a screaming match. And then one person packs their bags and drives away, and we're having a separation, right? It's an extremely reactive, you know, sort of knee jerk in the moment of highly intense emotions, you separate. And that's not what we're talking about here. Yeah. So we don't want to start talking about or looking at separation when we are in a heightened emotional state. We want to do that when we're actually calmed down, we feel some stability, some balance, and then we come at it from a very, hopefully, as objective as we can, although we know that's hard. But understand that what we're discussing today is very different from the knee-jerk reactive separations you hear about. So that, and the other side is, there's also something that we would call, this isn't an all or nothing scenario either. Sometimes, you know, Steve, you and I have helped couples to take a break from each other.
Yes.
Which might be a week or two, or maybe a 30-day break. And so that's possible in order to decide or determine if we need a full lengthy separation. And so this isn't an all or nothing black or white scenario here. There's lots of, you know, gradations of how this can work.
Absolutely. One thing you definitely need to avoid here is, and this, we see this far too often, is when couples will say, well, we need to separate to change, but there's a lack of honesty or transparency going on. And one or even sometimes both partners is actually kind of on the sly or not being really honest either with themselves or with their partner, and are actually just prepping to end the marriage. Which, if that is the case, right, and that needs to happen, that's fine, because there are, you know, there are both therapeutic and non-therapeutic separations. And sometimes we just need to be really clear, right? If the relationship is to have any chance at all, there has to be continued transparency about at least that point, so that we are setting this so that the therapist who's intervening and you as a couple can make goals that are actually going to serve the direction you're trying to go. Right. For example, it's too common for someone to say, well, I want to break or I want to separate, when really that is a mechanism for escape or some sort of avoidance.
Right.
Right. I just want to time out, but then not really come back to it, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And the only way that we create safety, similar to the skill set of taking a break, which we talk about on this podcast all the time and in our Dare to Connect program, think of this process. This is one asset that those two concepts have in common, is a therapeutic separation has to have some sort of a structure in place for ongoing check-ins and accountability.
Absolutely.
Right? How are things pacing, right? After we set goals, which we're going to talk about in a minute, one of those many things that a therapist can help the couple do is to say, okay, how are we navigating this? Because again, this can't be a break. If it's a therapeutic separation, the work on the relationship has to continue on some level.
It's so true, right? It's right. Not just, well, you go over there and I'll go over here.
And then we'll just come back together in 6 months and hope we've somehow made a change.
Exactly.
That is a recipe for ending the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so there has to be some sort of a mechanism where you guys are coming together, even if it's once a month, and even if it's only in the therapy office, or even if it's only in like an email check-in or something, there has to be some sort of mechanism for both of you to be able to build trust and connection on whatever level is appropriate. Hey, you need to know, these are the things that I've been working on, and here's the stuff that I've been learning. Here are the things that I'm continuing to struggle with, and vice versa. And then the partner can also say, you know, that's, I appreciate that. That here's the impact that that knowledge has on me. Can you explain more about this, right? If that isn't happening, you really are signing the death warrant on your marriage, because you're not, unless relationships are always either progressing or regressing. And a therapeutic separation is one where we sometimes do slow it down, sometimes to even just kind of keeping it on a pulse, but that still requires some sort of active accountability, active nurturing, active something.
Okay? Well, this is where we need to be proactive in this separation, which includes a very deep discussion about what are our goals in this. Right? It tends to be just a knee-jerk reactive, let's just get away from each other. We need to take that to the next level and say, what do we want to achieve through all of this? Steve, this is where you and I often will take couples through something that they've never, ever done before, which is to come up with a personal needs list.
Yeah.
Here's what I need from you in order for me to stay in this relationship. And each partner puts together that list of needs. Individually, here's what I need from you as an individual, and here's what I need from this coupleship. Can we establish what those things are, knowing that we're not going to start to meet those immediately, but can we at least put them in place, what those goals and expectations are, and now we can have a plan how to progressively, little baby step by baby step, start to work on this while we're separated, as opposed to what you said, yep, we've been apart, now we'll come back together, but what's happened in the interim? And either that's the thing that ends up just ending the relationship, or what I've seen, we have a separation and we come back 6 months or a year later and we just continue where we left off and the same dysfunction starts all over again.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So, because that is the idea, right? We're trying to break out of patterns, right? And we're trying to set new ones, and there's no way to do that. That we really connect with the idea of sometimes the relationship has become so difficult that it's just like, I just need to be out for a little while, but please don't fall into that trap, because it's really easy to do that. And then you find yourself, if you don't have that structure, you will just start to drift apart, or things become muddled again. You'll fall into the same patterns. It's problematic on a lot of levels.
Yeah. And as you have those goals and those needs lists, come together, as Steve said, periodically to have accountability. How are we doing? Where are we at?
Yes.
What have you seen? What have I seen? What is the therapist seeing? And I think another thing, Steve, you and I talked about as we were preparing for today, one of the things that's often neglected, shoved aside, especially by us addicts, while you're separated, critical, 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 what is your personal healing and recovery plan for while you're apart? If right. I'm not actively, aggressively, intentionally engaging in my own healing and recovery and self-improvement, trying to move into the best version of myself possible, what happens now when we come back together as a couple if I haven't done that work?
Yes, absolutely.
So critical.
No, for sure. And because remember, guys, how do we rebuild trust, right? When trust has been broken, trust, you know, a good recipe for trust is consistency over time, if you wanted to put it into kind of like a math equation, right? Consistency over time is how we rebuild trust. It's demonstrating I have the capacity to set a goal, follow through with it, and provide verifiable accountability for it, right? Yep. And so it's a valuable time to be able to do those kinds of things. And the only way that you're going to be able to manage that in a healthy way without the flare-ups, without the dysfunctional communication, is if you have, again, some sort of an externally moderated mechanism for doing that, right? The emotions and the flare-ups that usually lead to a separation in most cases, and then the accompanying resulting emotional fallout, right? The shame, the desperation, the codependency symptoms that come into play when Mark and I navigate these with clients, the forces behind those can be really great. And without somebody, again, at the head of that, the chance for boundaries being broken on one or both parties is exponentially high. I have worked with couples where even with therapeutic guidance, we set a boundary, they got together to exchange kids, and then they broke their boundaries around sex. Not that it's bad, obviously, for a couple to have sex, but we had set those boundaries around no sex for the time being because of the emotions involved and the intimacy and the burnout and all that stuff. And they would, even under those kinds of directions, couples will sort of break that. So you can imagine how without that kind of input and regulation, it just gets really muddled.
And yeah. You opened up another critical part of therapeutic separation, which is what are the boundaries going to be?
Yes.
What are the boundaries around, as you said, whether we're going to be sexual or physical? What does that look like? What are the boundaries around, Steve, something you called as we prepared today, off-limit topics?
Yes.
Meaning, not that we're avoiding topics, but there are certain topics that we don't have, that we know we don't have the capacity to address because they always end up taking us to anger and volatility and explosions. So we're taking those topics off the table for now.
At least unless it's under special circumstances, which again is where the therapist can be so helpful with this, right?
We don't talk
about this outside of Steve's office.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Whatever.
Yep. Exactly. This involves children, this scenario that was sent into us. So what are going to be the boundaries around that?
Yeah.
For example, is this going to be an in-home separation where we both continue to live in the same house, but he's in the basement and she's in the upstairs? Is he going to go live with his parents or live in an apartment? So what is those practicalities going to look? And if he's going to live in a separate space, now boundaries become huge.
Yes.
As well as accountability. What's his plan for being safe while he's living in an apartment?
Right.
I remember I had a client years ago where they decided on a full separation, and he lived in a little teeny tiny apartment. It was kind of in a ghetto. And he was a fairly well-off guy, but they decided that part of his recovery and being serious about this was to kind of go bare bones. Mm. So he lived in this little tiny apartment, and every week he was coming to my therapeutic group, and we would work through what his plan looked like to be in that apartment alone and how he was going to be safe and honor his commitments and be active in his recovery. It was a big deal. He had a big plan, and he was accountable for that plan on a daily basis.
Mm, yeah.
This becomes huge.
It's a great example. And you can see just by that one example and by what we're talking about, hopefully everybody, that why this is so important to have somebody helping you with this, because we're in the long and short of it, because there's 100 ways this can happen. Where things go wrong is when boundaries become blurred, right? We start making little concessions because of this or that. I, for example, we see partners all the time where they're really firm in their boundaries in the beginning. He starts improving, and 2 weeks in, boundaries are all of a sudden going out the window. Right? Codependency is kicking in and taking over. And those feelings of a very understandable and healthy love for the other person are overriding better judgment, right?
Yeah, how many times
prematurely trying to engage and things like that.
We've worked with couples who, Steve, you and I both have seen this way too much. We decided, for example, that there would be a sex fast.
Yes.
That was what was really healthy for the relationship, to start from scratch to reestablish basic intimacy and basic connection. And we have a couple come back to us after a weekend and sheepishly say, we had sex, right, on Saturday.
Yeah, I felt like a priest sometimes meeting with two teenagers when that happens. They can't make eye contact with me. And it's kind of cute on the one hand, but it is terribly devastating for the process, right?
For sure.
So along with that, when and as we move towards the end of this here, one thing that's really critical, again, that you really just can't navigate well without external help, is going to be having some sort of a plan for reconnection. So specifically, what are the benchmarks for when this happens and that happens? So what I mean by that is, for example, if we are taking all physicality off the table, what do both partners need to see from the other? And how long do they need to see it, or whatever are the boundaries going to be for when we put sex back on the table? And when we do, who is the one initiating it at the beginning? Is it a two-way street? Is it we kind of put that power in the case of the partner to help safeguard her safety, which is sometimes what we do? You guys can just see how these little things, these little details, they may seem like it's almost too nitty-gritty. I promise you they're not, because if you screw this up, that's where stuff goes really bad, really fast in a separation.
And often if you want to have the best chance at reconciliation, it isn't a matter of taking sex off the table entirely, then bringing sex back on the table entirely. You may decide that, wow, we've got to kind of start over here. Maybe we're going to, in our separation time, we're going to start dating each other.
Yeah. We got to go back to the dating courting process. And what is that going to look like?
I'm going to see if you can just hold my hand.
Yeah.
And do that for a while. And then maybe we can start to hug. Maybe we'll kiss after a while.
And can we handle the emotions tied to that?
Exactly.
Right? Before we try something else.
Before we try something else.
Yes.
Yeah. Very important to start talking, because we know, I mean, Steve and I did this. We know so many of you. We didn't start out with all of the various healthy practices in our early relationship because we didn't know how.
No.
Who modeled it to us? So we did a lot of things wrong that established the relationship and is part of the reason why we struggle so much today. So now we kind of have a chance to go back and, quote, do it right.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity. It's one of the great things about therapeutic separation. All the things we wished we had done or regretted we didn't, hey, we actually get to do a lot of those now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. Well, those are kind of the big pieces with that as far as the internals of the coupleship go. Let's shift here and let's talk about some of the externals, because one of the big concerns that was brought up in this submission, and understandably so, is, you know, this whole navigating stuff with the outside world, you know, family and friends and people at church and all that kind of stuff. And there are ways to still create trust here. So we've got some really good news for this partner and maybe some less desirable news for this partner.
Yeah.
So we'll start with the good news. The first is that we always encourage couples to, as much as they can, to collaborate together and come up together with boundaries of what are we going to share, how much are we going to share, and when are we going to share it.
And who are we going to share it with?
Correct. Because think of transparency. There is a way to be authentic with somebody while regulating the depth to which you go. Does that make sense?
Yep.
For example, as a therapist right now, I have some medical issues that I deal with. I'm 40 something now, and you know, life happens. There are times where if I need to close my clinic for the day, either medically or otherwise, sometimes it's appropriate to share that with my clients. Sometimes it's enough to simply say, look, I'm not going to be able to meet with you today. When can we rebook? Right. Both are honest approaches, but depending on the level of appropriateness, the depth to which I share is going to change. Right. And it's the same concept here. It is important to be transparent and open, but oftentimes couples feel almost boxed in. Like if we tell people that we're taking a break, we have to tell them why. No, you don't. Why do you have to tell them? There's no rule that says that. There's nothing wrong with just telling somebody, yeah, we're not really in a place to talk about that right now. We're just taking a break. There's nothing wrong with saying that.
Not at all.
You have the right and the obligation, I would say, to, as a couple, come up with that so that you're protecting each other's stories in a healthy way. You're still practicing transparency. You're still practicing vulnerability, but you're recognizing the audience to which you're speaking and honoring, as Brené Brown puts it, people need to hear earn the right to hear your story.
People have earned the right to hear your story. They're trustworthy. They've proven they're trustworthy over time.
And it's safe. It's not going to disrupt your healing, right? All of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to come together and do that. Now, here's the bad news side.
Here's the bad news side.
the part about, you know, this, then this, and this partner brought this up, and I connected with this as an addict because I remember being paranoid about this. What are people going to think? The people at church, they're going to see us there separately. They're going to judge. They're going to do this. How do we stop it? The simple answer is you can't. Okay. Yeah. People are going to do what they're going to do. The age-old rule of vulnerability and transparency is the degree to which we exercise those concepts, the degree to which we're real, has a converse relationship with how much control we have over the situation, meaning the more vulnerable I am, the less I have any control over what they're going to think or how they're going to feel about it or anything. They're going to do what they're going to do, right? And I'm a big believer that the people in my world who are really there for me and really, I guess, care about me, right, are invested in me, those people, they may not agree with the decisions my spouse and I are making or the choices, but they will respect it. And if they're not able to do that, again, this is just gospel according to Steve, maybe that's helpful for me to know so that I don't invest as much in that relationship in the future.
Well, yeah, part of this, we're talking about therapeutic separation for this couple. Maybe you're going to discover therapeutic separation from certain relationships in your life.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, right.
You learn really quick in a situation like this, who is here, it's not about who's going to love me, meaning they agree with me. It's about who's going to love me and be able to be honest with me, but they're going to respect me enough to say, you know what, we trust you and we're here for you and how can we support? If the person is just going to immediately go down to judgment, that's probably a relationship you're probably wasting energy on anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
So
and the other side of this, there's a part of me that's like, really, are you going to say this to everybody listening? And yes, I am. And what it comes down to is this is an incredibly awesome and incredibly hard opportunity to learn one of the primary principles of recovery and healing, which is what? Surrender.
Yeah.
I can only control my side of the street and I want to learn how to let go of the rest. And now we get into the whole concept of trusting your higher power, whatever that is for you, trusting the process, letting go of what you can't do things about and just sticking to your side. And we know that's hard because there's fears, there's trepidation, but what are they going to think? What are they saying behind our backs? I saw the looks on their faces at church. Mm-hmm. And just learning how to let go, such a big part of this.
It's terribly scary, but we will tell you from experience how liberating it is to do that. And if you're looking for more information about that, I mean, good 12-step program. We always talk about Sexaholics Anonymous, S-Anon for partners, SA Lifeline's another one. SAA is a great fellowship as well. Sex Addicts Anonymous. There are lots of good fellowships there. I will tell you one great place to come and learn about this, both from a 12-step standpoint and from a personal standpoint. Come and get your butt and dare to connect. Okay? We would love to have you and your spouse come in. We talk about and address these kinds of issues all the time. Right now, this podcast, we've got about a month-long backlog on questions. And we don't even select every question because sometimes they've been addressed recently. What if you could be in a program where you could just ask us anything you wanted right on the spot and get an answer within a day?
Four times a week.
That's what Dare to Connect offers. Okay. We cover a variety of concepts. We cover, you know, monthly regular topics, but every session we spend the first usually 20 to 50% addressing current issues that your marriage is facing right now in real time.
Yeah.
There's no program out there like Dare to Connect. I don't have tact today, so I'm just going to be straight with it. If there was a better one, I'd send you there. We just want you to get better, but there's not. That's why we made this one. Get your butts over here. Come check it out. You can grab a free 2-week trial that's still ongoing right now at daretoconnectnow.com. We'd love to have you join us. All right. Well, with that in mind, one more point to address, because we do need to talk about the kids, because there was a question about that.
Oh, yeah, there was.
So let's talk about that for just a second. So the child component to this is terribly difficult. And I will tell you what I understand, and Mark, feel free to chime in or even disagree if your understanding is different. Everything that I have read about the research around separated children versus divorced kids and all that stuff is that it is best and optimal to keep the children together in a living situation with both parents intact if the parents are able to model and stay in an authentically healthy relationship. If the relationship becomes toxic to the point where the children are picking up on it, the research also shows it is better in the long term for children to be separated rather than the old notion, the old school notion of just stick it out for the kids no matter what is nonsense. It's critical that you keep that at the forefront of your mind. And every relationship, that's going to be different, right? Because that's, again, here's where a therapist can help you with kind of boots on the ground in your situation, because it is complicated about, you know, the pros and the cons, and there will be pros and cons no matter what you do. But that's a good, at least starting place that I would say is if you're able to maintain healthy boundaries and be civil with one another, he's able to be consistent in his recovery. You're able to be consistent in yours and you have the space to do it. An in-home separation might work well. We've seen those work really well. On the same token, though, things may be so volatile or so high intensity. I have worked with couples, and I know Mark has too, where they just look at each other and the fight starts.
Yep.
And if that's the case, then yeah, you are probably better served finding something different. And so those are my thoughts about it.
And as a kid who grew up in a house like that, where
this would be great. Yeah, Mark has experience.
My mom and several stepdads stayed together way longer than they should have. You think that you're having private, you know, yelling matches in your bedroom. And let me tell you, kids are incredibly perceptive.
Yes.
Kids can pick up on body language and energy where words aren't even spoken. And I remember as a kid, I could feel the tension between my parents. I felt it. I would walk in the house and I would go, oh crap, here we go. And they hadn't even started yelling yet.
You got to chuckle about it because it's so sad. It's just so hard to hear. Gosh.
And it created in me a kid that I was very anxiety ridden. I was very hypervigilant. I mean, I was always on my guard, not knowing when the whole, you know, the blow up was going to come next. And it just creates anxious, isolated, socially kind of backward kids in many cases.
Yeah. So
again, something that you've got to navigate with help to find out what is going to be best. Cause you can see there's a lot of balls in the air to balance. Him, her, the children, the scenario. It's a lot going on here.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much. As always, we appreciate your patronage, and we so love that we gained another country this week, Mark, let me know. We are now being listened to in 190 countries out of like 194 or something that are on the monitor.
It's incredible.
And we feel so blessed that so many of you tune in, and we really do love and care about each of you. When we take calls or when we take submissions like this, we reflect on our wives and our own past, and we don't monetize this podcast. We love being here with you. We hope that you'll come check out, like I said, Dare to Connect. It's our passion to see people not have to reinvent the wheel, the way Mark and I did. Just thank you for being here, and have a great week as you're enjoying the holiday season. We hope again that you're resting and recharging, and we will catch you next week.
Sounds great.
Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.